So just to kind of give you an overview, we're going to be talking about like what healthy and unhealthy stress looks like and what parents can do to help with that. And then we're going to be talking also about self-care and what teens can do to engage in self-care. And also we're going to go through an activity at the end that you can take with you and practice with your teen or your kid and hopefully help de-stress and bring back some more mindfulness and present moment peace. Yeah. So
one of the things that when Greg asked us to do this, one of the things he said, like Delicious just stated, is that self-care and knowing what healthy stress is. I mean, we all hear those terms all the time. So I'm going to talk a little bit about self-care and what it is that parents can kind of look for in their teens, and what and how they can help in terms of regulating their own kind of self-care. And so one of the things, if you look at your handout, the first statement there is, you know, helping teens build healthy relationships. I was talking to Mara earlier, and I can't remember this time frame where being a teenager is so difficult. And I see, you know, there's some little ones over here, and I would probably assume that that it's similar for younger kids, maybe not as intense, but it's tough to be a child in these days and times. And so if your teens ever said anything about or mentioned anything like, nobody understands me, I'm ugly, you know, no one gets me, I feel everyone judges me, those kind of things, those negative kind of statements, that's certainly a red flag. And that's something that we want to pay attention to, because what that says is there's problems that are emerging. And as parents, we know our kids better than anyone. And just being aware and open to some of the things. Welcome, come on in.
We're just buzzing past the information.
Yeah. So just being aware of some of those things is a red flag. So when it's in terms of teenagers and even younger kids, helping them to be able to find and identify what a healthy relationship looks like is something that we all should be aware of, because too many times things get mixed up with the wrong crowd. I mean, how many of you parents have ever worried about maybe your teen might be or your child might be hanging out with people who may not be the most positive for them? I mean, I think we all have. I know I certainly did. So being able to help them establish what's a healthy relationship look like. And it starts in the home. It starts by telling them all the time that they're loved, that they're good enough. Feeding them in terms of I don't want to say ego, but their self outlook on not only them but where they belong in the world and how important they are. So being able to come up with things that are healthy and that help kids feel good about themselves. So, but at the same time, we have to understand that there's sometimes kids that our kids hook up with whom they may think are pretty good for them, and then find out later on that they're really not that good for them. So they become disappointed with that relationship. And a lot of times they want to hang on to that and sometimes give up who they really are, who you've taught them to be and how you've raised them in terms of morals and values and judgments, because they want to fit in. They want to fit in. And seeing maybe that a relationship doesn't fit maybe that mold, they get disappointed. And so they tend to give up some of that stuff. So we want to make sure that we're paying attention to that. And so is there any questions about that? Just being able to help teens build that that confidence and in relationships. And so the second part to that is what does a healthy relationship really look like? What do you think a healthy relationship looks like? What would be a first sign that a relationship is good?
They're happy.
They're happy. And they're happy, their grades are good, there's not much conflict in the home. You see their friends, they come over, it's open. You know, there's no secrecy involved in that. And so that also is a sign of a healthy relationship. What's a sign of a not so healthy relationship?
Sneaking around,
lying.
You speak like you got some experience there.
Yeah, sneaking around, lying, being argumentative all the time. Those are red flags that maybe people that they're associating with may not be as positive for them as they think they are. So then the other piece to that is being able to, and we've got some little sayings on here that we pulled off of our website. I want you to read that and really take note, because what we believe in at James Mason is that all kids are valuable. This world will not be the same without them. And they need to understand and own their power. And as parents, we need to help them to recognize that and to respond in a way that is good for not only them but for the people around them. So if they've got siblings, if they're an older sibling, being able to bring that older sibling up in terms of being a role model. So that one of the things about these kind of these days and times is that sometimes kids they feel like they can't say no. They feel like they have to be in the middle of everything. They have to if they're not there, they're missing out on something. And what happens is they forget who they are. And so what usually happens is they feel pressured into going when they're tired, when they've got homework, when they're not feeling well, whatever it is, they kind of give up on that, and they go out and they even though the things may be productive and they may be good for them, but they're forgetting who they are, and so they're tired in the morning. They don't want to go to school, and when you're tired and you don't want to go to school, you don't want to do anything. And when parents try to get them to do things, what usually happens? An argument, right? An argument. So that's kind of where we have to understand that we just need to kind of sit back. We just have to kind of listen. And then we don't provide our kind of intake on what's going on. We allow them to just kind of let us know what they need from us. So is there any questions so far on that first page about healthy relationships, about being able to let kids know it's okay to say no? Any questions about that? Okay. So if you want to just turn the page over, what do you guys think? When we talk about self-care, where do you think that starts when we talk about self-care?
You kind of have to be aware of your own internal state to know that either you're okay and keeping yourself okay, or you're not okay and something needs to change.
Yeah, it starts with us, right? It starts with us being able to know. Are we providing a good example for our kids? Are we giving them permission to take care of themselves? You know, whatever that looks like. Are we being able to to model what good self-care looks like. But if we're not, I mean, you're right. If we don't know that for ourselves,
I was talking about our kids, but also, I mean, it helps that we do. But if they can learn how to check in with themselves mm-hmm. and be like, "Am I okay? Maybe I'm not okay. And what can I do now that I know I'm not okay?"
Right. Yeah. How do they know how to say that, though? That's the thing. How do they know? Because some of our kids don't even know how to label their feelings, right? They just know they don't feel good, you know. And so how do they know that? It comes from us, you know. If we're tired, if we're drained, if we're, you know, weary or whatever, we need to be able to give them those words and say, "Gosh, I'm just, you know, I really want to go to this thing that I'm exhausted. You know, I need time for myself. I need to be able to." To know how my body feels. And if we do that all the time, if we're aware of that for ourselves, our kids are gonna see that. And they're gonna say things like, "Oh, you know, my friends asked me to this party, but I'm just really tired and I need rest." Yes.
I like how you said it kind of starts with us, it starts at home. Mm-hmm. You know, if our kids see us functioning as mm-hmm. ridiculously high level of obligations and constant stress and calendaring and schedules, mm-hmm. and they think that that's how they need to function and run and move. If we're showing balance, if we're showing healthy, destructive, you know, whatever self-care, mm-hmm. whether that's bathing and, you know, mental health and breaks and no, I can't go because I need to stay home and do my laundry,
yes.
or whatever,
yes.
I think that
yes.
they're going to see, oh, it's okay to say no. But I think we're in a world where we're overscheduled, overbooked, overstressed,
absolutely.
Over whatever, and so they think that's what they have to do, and we can't say no, so they're not going to say no.
Right? Well, if you stop and think about it, what is one of the kids' main goals? I want to fit in. You know, I need to be popular. I want people to like me. You know, I don't want to miss out on anything. And so a lot of those things that you're talking about go out the window. And you know, unfortunately, that's like you said, that's how we run our lives too. Mm-hmm. So I like what you said about, and you were talking about your children, but it starts here.
A lot of self-care is boundaries, right? Mm-hmm. Setting boundaries for yourself and helping kids set boundaries for themselves, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I think some kids think it's not okay to not feel okay.
Right.
I have to feel okay. I can't be sad. I can't be tired. I can't feel this because no one else is, but no one else is talking about it. That's the difference.
Right.
Or they see it on Instagram and it's
right.
all perfect and happy. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
You know, there's an app for that.
Right.
People correct them and they're like, "I'm feeling whatever," and people are like, "Be positive. Be happy."
Yeah.
It's invalidating.
Yeah.
Because everybody struggles, right? And the way that we help ourselves with that is through taking care of ourselves.
Yeah. So I think one of the things that we can do as parents is validate those things for our kids and then help them see that the best way that you can get these things is by showing up at your best. By being your best, then you're going to get, you know, the things that you want are going to come to you. But if you're not at your best, you're probably at a higher risk to be disappointed. And not see that it's because you're worn out or you're just not feeling well. And then the other thing is, how can parents help that? I mean, I have a list of things down here about what you can teach your kids to do in terms of self-care, and then what parents can do in terms of modeling that. And I swear I was looking at this and I was like, "Oh, you know, this is some good stuff." I like the part about just daydreaming and just giving yourself time to just sit and just think about things like, what would be a great vacation that I could be on? Or what was my last great vacation? How can I eventually get back there? What would taking my family there look like? So take a look at these for you as parents, and then see what it is that you can help encourage your kids to do in terms of self-care, because there's a lot of information down here. And then a couple other things before I let Talisha take over is when kids start talking about being judged, they start having a lot of negative self-talk. I like to do the coin in the jar thing and help them to kind of rephrase that. It's not that you're feeling bad, but it's just that you're just really tired, and you can reframe that. So every time they say something negative, or every time they feel like they need to do something in order to fit in or in order to please somebody, you know, have them put a coin in the jar and then help them to reframe it. Because they do feel that way, but if you reframe it a different way, then it feels better. It lands differently on them. And so they're able to kind of take that in and to be better, healthier kids. And then the last thing is, remember, we are, as a parents, our job is to raise healthy adults. And if we're not healthy ourselves, that means self-care, that means being in tune with our kids, that means really kind of having things start with us, then there's no way that we can help them. We're gonna put it this way, we're gonna fall short. Okay, so that's a little bit about self-care. I would encourage you to kind of read more in depth with this. But with that, I'm gonna turn, if there's no questions.
I just have a thought.
Yes, go ahead.
That maybe I could share on this. And I have my 20-year-old daughter here that will keep me in balance. She'll call me out if I'm not.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I like being called out.
One thing that I found, maybe parents can find this useful, is, you know, it's okay not to be okay.
Right.
Sure.
And I've not instructed, but I've tried to teach my kids that it's fine if you don't show up as your best all the time.
Yes.
But set a limit. You set 5 minutes, go be mad about whatever it is you're mad about. Go be sad, go be upset, go be whatever. And then whatever time limit you want. But don't stay there, because that's when you end up going way downhill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So that's just something I use in my house. I'm like, it's okay to be sad and upset, but go take care of it for 5 or 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about it if you want to. If you don't, that's fine. But when you are, I'm here. And that way they know that it's okay to have those feelings. Mm-hmm. And then the one thing that I've always taught this to my kid is, not everyone will like you, and you don't have to like everyone.
That's perfect.
However, that does not mean you can't be kind.
Yes.
It doesn't discount being kind. You can still be kind to people you don't like.
Yeah.
So I think our kids get in this, everybody has to like me and I have to like everybody and we have to all be happy. And I'm like, no, you don't.
No, you don't.
But you can be kind. But,
yeah.
You know, so.
What I love about that is that you're not fixing the problem for them.
Right.
You're allowing them to fix their own problems. And you're just there as a support. So when our kids run to us, what's the biggest thing we want to do is we want to jump in and we want to fix things. And all we're doing is just enabling them and not teaching them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's, I love that.
I tell them that with their teachers. You're not going to like all your teachers. I'm not going to be the mom that calls the principal every time I turn around because the teacher's not treating me fair.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to figure out what you need to do in that class. You don't have to like your teacher. They don't have to like you. But you're going to have to do what you need to do to get, you know. So it goes in both worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Good. I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah.
So I have one question. Like, it's easy to identify if they are happy, positive, productive, and if they are on the other side of the spectrum. What is there in between?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you see lack of motivation, or they don't want to show up, basically, for whatever it is, like starting the day, or homework, or whatever it may be. How do you help them see and recognize the state they are in so they can actually make that shift?
Good. That's a great question. So a lot of times, that lack of motivation could be a sign of something bigger. And when you say that they're not this way or that way, they're kind of in between. Just having that lack of motivation, not wanting to go to school, not wanting to do homework, laying around in bed all the time, not getting them out. So what I would do, and what I would say is just say, a kid your age might be, why would a kid your age not want to do something like this? An open-ended question to get them to answer, instead of a yes or no kind of thing, an open-ended question, and ask them, what is it that you don't like about this? How can I help you? And sometimes they don't have the right words to say, but maybe what you can do is just be able to, I don't want to say coach, but just be able to kind of leave it open. And just say, you know, why don't you think about that? Give them a question that they can think about, and then give them a time frame for them to come back and tell you. But a lot of times, that, like I said, that might be an indication that you want to seek some more help, whether it's talking to a therapist. Sometimes it's hard for kids to talk to parents.
Well, because my thought is, you know, as an adult, you get to feel your feelings and you think about it and you put it into words.
Right.
When you're at that age, you probably don't even have the vocabulary to,
right,
to put those feelings into words. And to get them to talk to you about what's really going on, they don't even know.
They don't know
where to start.
Yeah.
So how do you help them, you know, try to shape that so it will come out?
I think, and to add on to what Reggie said about that, part of it is just developing that vocabulary of emotions. And what I often use with kids who struggle with just knowing emotions, you can find what's called mixed emotion cards on Amazon. They're pretty cheap, and they just have all sorts of different emotions, and you can kind of go through them and see what gets brought up with each emotion. And another piece that I see happen a lot too with kids who struggle with motivation or struggle, just kind of, they're in that middle path, is that sometimes they need a little bit more like reinforcement or reward. You know, a lot of times kids just get so like, nothing I'm gonna do is gonna help this situation, like a lot of helplessness, right? And so it's helping provide those incentives to being like, no, it is worth it. You can do this, you know, because I think a lot of us even get to that place of like,
what's the point?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so even for our self-care, even it's just like, all right, I can have a piece of chocolate if I do this, you know, and things like that. Mm-hmm. And helping them see that they can get rewarded for even little behaviors. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
So I like what you said about the emotion cards,
mm-hmm.
because it does provide, you know, facial kind of features too, because sometimes
mm-hmm.
even the word doesn't
right.
fit. But if they can see the facial feature of what that word looks like,
mm-hmm.
then maybe that will give them some way to label that.
Mm-hmm.
So, any other questions on self-care? Okay.
Yeah, and I think that's a great segue into talking about healthy and unhealthy stress. So this is the next handout that you guys have. So the first part of this, I just kind of want to talk about like better understanding the stress that teens are facing, both at home and at school, and then what it looks like and what parents can do. And so stress can range from like being sort of moderately, yeah, this is stressful, but I can handle it, to debilitating anxiety where kids don't want to do anything, they don't want to leave their house because it's just too much, right? And so, and it's subjective based on the person. It's subjective based on their own resiliency, what they've experienced, what they can handle. And if the teen is more on this end of like debilitating anxiety, I would definitely recommend seeking out some help, because that can help give them the tools to overcome some of that stuff. And stress can be really helpful. I don't know if any of you guys have seen that TED Talk where this woman talks about that there are a lot of benefits to healthy stress. And it can help us kind of perform better. We rise to the occasion, right? Stress is also this vital warning sign for our systems. It triggers like the fight, flight, or freeze response. And when things get too stressful, that response makes things kind of shut down. So I want to talk about the brain a little bit. With the teenage brain, first of all, the prefrontal cortex, which is just right up here, it's the part of decision-making, executive functioning, all of that. It's not fully developed until they're, like, for women, they're 18, and then for men, 25. So it's not quite online yet. And they're pretty emotion-based. So it's helping them when they do get to that place of like, I can't handle this, I can't do it anymore, they're sort of flooded with emotion, helping them see that they can kind of come back down and it will be okay, we can handle this, right? The other piece that I want to talk about with the teenage brain is that around the age of 15, there are chemicals that are released in the brain that kind of make things very egocentric. Like they're worried that everybody is judging them, everybody's viewing them. It's all kind of about what they're doing, right? And it's, so this is a very natural piece of the stress. It just sort of biologically happens. And I think it can be easy as parents to be like, oh, you don't even know what stress is like. You don't got bills, you don't got this, right? And at the same time, it's just a different level. And it's also the first time they're really dealing with stress of this magnitude. If you look down on the handout, it says, you know, a 2014 APA study showed that adolescent stress is comparable to adult stress. Teens reported having a stress level of 5.8, whereas adults reported having a stress level of 5.1. And so what they're stressing about, it's the same level of stress that we experience, and it's the first time they're knowing how to deal with it. So it's a lot. It's a lot for anybody. And if you can think back to your own teenage days and figuring it out, it seemed daunting, right? Especially now that there's social media, right? It just compounds everything because everybody's comparing their highlight reel to everybody else's. And it's interesting because there was a CNN special done, I think in 2013, where they found that what teens value now, 10 years ago, radically different. What teens value now is fame, whereas 10 years ago, it was like friendship and connection. And so it's radically different in that regard. I know, right? It's just, it's crazy that, yeah, how many followers or friends you have, that adds to the stress. And so it's just some things for us to be aware about. They also experience stress to be perfect, like was stated earlier. We have to do all the things and we have to excel in every area. And when we can model for them, you don't have to be perfect, right? We're human. We make mistakes. We need a break. That helps them realize, oh, I can take a break too, right? So what healthy stress can look like? Healthy stress is short. It's brief, or short-term, brief, semi-predictable. Like, you know when you go to school, you know at some point you're going to get a pop quiz. It's still stressful, and it's going to happen, right? And then it's also moderate. Those are kinds of things that healthy stress fall under. Things that stress teens out today include school, family, social life, the feeling of lack of time, which I'm sure everybody can relate to. Like, I don't have enough time to get everything done. Right? They have that same sense. And sports. And there are a number of categories that can fall under each one of these things. These are just sort of the basics that teens reported feeling the most stressed out about. And there can be healthy stress in those, right? Because when they're competitive with sports, they rise to the occasion. And that's what we see with the healthy stress. When it comes to unhealthy stress, it's prolonged and it wears on the person emotionally, physically, mentally, even spiritually, all these kinds of things. That's when you see that's what unhealthy stress is. Examples of unhealthy stress would be any trauma that they're experiencing, either in the home or that they've experienced outside of the home. This could be physical abuse, sexual abuse, anything like that. Even Reggie talked earlier about healthy relationships, and teens engage in a lot of unhealthy, even abusive relationships. That can be very unhealthy in terms of stress levels. Another piece of unhealthy stress is feeling like worrying about things that are outside of somebody's control, right? When we worry about that, that just creates unnecessary anxiety for us, and it's very unhealthy for us as well. Another piece is when teens are worried about their basic needs. Where are they going to get their next meal? If they're homeless, things like that, that definitely promotes an unhealthy level of stress and any abusive relationships, kind of like what we talked about. And what happens is that when there is that prolonged level of stress, it creates physiological changes in the brain, and those are harder to correct. So knowing those warning signs of like, all right, this is long-term, maybe we should go get some help, that sort of thing, kind of helps out. Any questions so far? Just kind of word vomited a little bit. So, okay. Any questions, feel free to just stop me. And so what these kinds of things look like. Healthy stress looks like teens are more motivated and they're more focused. And even in yourselves, you sort of notice you get more of like a boost of energy and your memory seems a little bit clearer. It increases efficiency and blood pressure and heart rate. And it fortifies the immune system, actually. When we're in a healthy level of stress, it releases cortisol, which kind of fights off infection. And so if you notice that, like, during the school year, I noticed this for myself when I was in school, I wouldn't get sick until the breaks, because then, like, my cortisol levels would decrease because my stress would decrease. Mm-hmm. And so it's just something to, like, keep in mind, that healthy stress actually kind of helps us fight off infection.
Talisha, can I add something?
Yeah, of course.
So one of the things that... that I know with my kids, mm-hmm. is that I have a couple kids who have some pretty bad anxiety, and they get stressed if it starts snowing, or if it's, you know, if they've only got a quarter tank of gas and no money or whatever. What I found with them is that part of their growth and their productivity is being stressed out. They love that. They thrive off of it, which is so foreign to me because I don't do that, you know. And so that's, I mean, if you ever have kids who are really seem stressed out all the time, but they're always on top of it, so that's kind of one of those situations where it's like, okay, you know, they seem stressed, but they're doing what they need to do. And that's a hard thing to kind of step in and stop, right? I mean, it's because part of it is they're doing well, and then the other part is you can see them really burning out, or you feel like they're burning out. Mm-hmm. So trying to develop a healthy medium right there is something that's important.
Right, and employing that self-care like you talked about. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so what unhealthy stress can look like for anybody, is this intense anxiety or intense irritability. A lot of teens, they can manifest the ways that they're feeling through just being irritable and angry, and really they're anxious or sad on the inside and they don't know how to express it. That's a big warning sign. A weakened immune system, so kids who are getting sick a lot, kind of shows that once you get overly stressed, the cortisol is no longer working and you actually get sick more. An inability to concentrate or complete tasks, and having a hard time with memory recall, things like that, shows that the kid is overly stressed. Somatic symptoms, which means like feeling things physically in the body. So stomach aches, headaches, like we hear all about tension headaches, tension migraines, things like that, that are brought on by stress. That can communicate maybe an unhealthy level of stress. Let's take a step back, take care of ourselves. And difficulty sleeping or changes in appetite. All these kinds of things communicate. There's maybe an unhealthy level that's happening. Anything that is a detrimental to the system. That kind of shows, like, there's a lot going on. So what parents can do, first is just recognizing the signs, which we've been talking a lot about today, and keeping the lines of communication open. And the ways that we can do this are by asking open-ended questions. So questions that do not result in a yes or no, like, did you have a good day? Yes or no? It doesn't help. So asking, well, how was your day? What did you do today? What were some of your favorite parts of today? What was difficult about today? And that way it helps kind of open those lines. And then keep asking questions on what their answers were. And you'll kind of be surprised to see what comes up. Setting reasonable limits for phone and sleep. Right? That's a big one because, like we talked about, social media is actually a stressor. And it can be stressful for teens at first to have it be taken away because it's almost like an addiction. And almost every teen I've worked with who has had like limits or even their phone taken away after a while, they're like, I don't even want to go back. Like, it's such a relief. And I think even as adults, we're like, God, I don't want to deal with this. Like, always being sort of at the beck and call of everybody else. It's stressful, right? And so setting those limits are really important, as well as to fall asleep. Sleep is so important to be able to regulate and manage any levels of stress. Encouraging teens towards self-care, which we've kind of talked about, and helping practice them yourselves, and even doing it yourselves, like go bowling together or something like that, right? And then we talked about this a lot, modeling stress management. Model how you handle your stress. Do you take it out on everybody else? Then let's reel that back in, you know? And or do you try to take care of everybody else rather than yourself? You know, noticing how what you're doing can help shape your kid and maybe if any changes need to be made. We've become a culture of like the busier we are, the more successful we are. And so, and our kids observe and learn this. And so not making success be about what we accomplish, but just about who they are as a person. You know, our kids really want to hear that. They want to hear that they matter just because they are. That goes volumes. And big piece for parents is to practice not internalizing if they're struggling and not rescuing or avoiding their struggle as well. And it can be really hard. Like, I have a lot of parents tell me I'm a failure because my kid is struggling. No, you're not a failure. You're doing the best you can. And what they are struggling with is theirs, like we talked about. It's theirs to figure out and you to support, but not to fix or rescue for them. Does that make sense? Yeah, like we talked about, supporting them in skills without doing it for them. So any questions on that at all, you guys?
I have just one comment. So
yeah.
A lot of times parents will feel that because their kids are struggling, that they're poor parents. And, you know, one of the things that I tell them is that, you know, you can still have a kid who struggles, but that doesn't mean that you're a poor parent. I mean, poor parenting, or good parenting still can result in having a kid who struggles.
Right.
It's a tough time to
watch.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
It really is.
Even I bring up to parents sometimes to bring that up to me. I say, well, what have you learned from your struggles? Just think back, if you know, your life hasn't been perfect all the time, and you've been able to move forward and you've learned a lot, there's growth. This is a growth moment.
Mm-hmm.
Just phrasing it in that way.
Right. Right.
But this many months from being done with med school, that's
And one other thing that Talisha and I talk about all the time in our multifamily group is that we're really, and I get some pushback on this sometimes, but we're really only as good as what we know in terms of parenting, right? And that is what we grew up with, how our parents taught us. If we don't know any better than how our parents taught us, and if it, let's say there's some deficiencies there, then what do? We either pass it on or we overcompensate, right? Or we undercompensate. But once we, and so nobody can blame us for that. But that's why we have things like this. And I love what Mara's doing with her outreach program and being able to educate people about, you know, what this is, what's going on now? What our kids are going through? What are parents going through? How can we help support each other? And I love, because it's, they don't wait until, like you said, it's a crisis. It's this kind of stuff that makes things work if we get it at the ground level. And so once we learn how to do this, and we still adhere to some of those old dysfunctional ways, then we can start pointing the finger at ourselves and saying, I know better. Why did I do this? But if we don't know any better, then we don't know. It's like somebody said, we know what we know, what we know, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think more and more, just I get to see a lot of students every day. The pattern of the avoidance pattern, avoiding challenging things and avoiding prioritizing your time or your resources in an effective way to kind of deal with kind of those stressors in a healthy way. I see that happening more and more with students.
Mm-hmm.
For my own kid, I feel like I'm really good at telling him what he should do. Like, you should be doing this, and you should be doing this, and you should be doing this.
Right.
What I don't see a lot of times is the engagement in a lot of those things. And as I've watched students over the last 13 years, and I don't know if it's a product of social media or what it is, but there seems to be less of an understanding of how how do I prioritize and engage in things effectively? And I don't know. Observation,
kind of know. Mm-hmm. So, are you talking about for the child or for the
parent? Talking about the students.
Okay. Yeah, and part of that I think is a skill, you know, that we all need to learn to overcome, because I think avoidance, honestly, is probably one of my favorite things. Like, I definitely will procrastinate on certain things and stuff like that. And modeling and telling the kids that they can do hard things, this is hard right now, and you can do it, is important.
Maybe just one other thought, one observation I've made is that I don't know if it's a product of just having immediate gratification in things. Like,
yeah.
Everything is, you know, like,
so instant.
Look at this, do this, do this. There's not a lot of forethought in doing things for the long term.
Right.
Engaging in something that's going to be beneficial in 2 years or 5 years. I'm going to ask my son what his 5-year plan was. Well, I'm going to go to college. Well, you're failing 2 classes right now, so... Maybe talk about, you know, what now is going to do to get you there. So, I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on how do you get kids to engage and not procrastinate and avoid those pressures? Because I think that once they start feeling those pressures, then there's that groupthink, right? They get around their other friends, and all of a sudden, oh, you're not doing your homework? Oh, fine. And then it leads to other things, you know?
That's a great question too, and I think part of it is one that, like we talked about, their brain development. That prefrontal cortex, you can't see, like, it's hard to see the future. Consequence thinking isn't really online yet, and so it's that part is hard. And helping them, what I do a lot with my kids is like helping them list out long term goals, and then how will short term goals get to those long term goals. So that they can sort of see the full map and the full picture, and also helping them see you don't have to do it all, one step at a time, right? Mm-hmm. And making those goals realistic and attainable. Does that help answer your question? Yeah.
A lot of times our kids, their, I guess, view of long-term goal is, and if you would ask me back then, I would have said, I want to play football, or I want to do something with coaching or something. My background was sports, so, but I had no idea about how to get there. And so, what I do like though is being able to have them give me where they want to be in a year, and then where they want to be in 5 years. And then from time to time, use it in therapy. How does this help you to get to this point? You said you wanted to be, you know, you said you wanted to be, a teacher. How is what you're doing now help you to do that? And so just bringing it back when it's useful for them in the moment is a good way to do that as well.
I think about the quote, which is, and it's simplified, and I think it rings true too, which is that anxiety is about focusing too much on the future, depression is about focusing too much on the past. And I think there's a piece to that, which is it helps being present in the moment. What can I do right?
Mm-hmm.
What do I have control over in this moment? That helps the most. And I'm just looking at our time, and I don't know... because we got about 5 minutes left. So I don't know if we have the full amount of time to like go into what we were going to do, but kind of to go into it if you guys want to look into it on your own. So we're going to do a mindfulness technique, because what happens is we think about our stressors and we get sort of dysregulated, emotionally sort of activated, right? It's a lot. And then we get present. We sort of focus in the moment what's going on. And come back to it, and the stressor's not as big, right? Being present in the moment helps us give us a lot of sense of control and power over what we can do,
mm-hmm.
and how we can alleviate our stress. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe what we can do is just have you think about,
mm-hmm.
instead of, you know, getting into this, because it is getting late. So maybe what we can do is just have you think about a really... like a pertinent and real life stressful situation that you've had to deal with? You know, the one that you thought that you never could get past? Mm-hmm. One that caused so much disruption for you that it dysregulated you and people around you? So if you just take a moment and think about when that has happened in your life. And then assign it a number.
Yeah. What, on a scale of 1 to 10, what would that stressor be?
At the time.
At the time, yeah.
You just think about that and how stressful it was, and assign a number to it.